Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Mayor Mike Duggan, Gary Torgo, Alicia George, and from WDET and DPTV, your moderator, Stephen Henderson. Thank you all, and with that, Stephen, take it away.
Okay, thanks all for being here. Thank you for being here, Mr. Mayor, and Alicia and Gary. Mr. Mayor, I want to start with you. Let's talk about this Strategic Neighborhood Fund, what it is, how it's working now, and what you hope it's going to accomplish for Detroit in the future.
Well, my perspective out of this really comes out of Midtown. When I became the CEO of the Detroit Medical Center in 2004, nobody knew what Midtown was. We act now like it's been successful forever, but the first TV ads I ran at DMC to let suburbanites know where the hospital was it said, we're located in downtown Detroit, one exit north of the stadiums. Sue Mosey, who was the head of Midtown, was furious with me, and she says, you can't advertise DMC as being downtown. We're in Midtown. I said, Sue, nobody ever heard of Midtown. In a very short period of time, that changed. And it changed because there was a coordinated strategy. There was Henry Ford and DMC and Wayne State. It was Kresge and Hudson Weber and philanthropic groups and a concentrated business effort. And we watched in a very short period of time, people forget this, Midtown came back faster than downtown. Those apartment buildings filled up first. And so as we have hit the point now where we don't have any more vacant buildings in downtown Detroit, very few in Midtown, the question is, when does the development spread to the neighborhoods? And so we went to take a page from the book of the city 10 or 15 years ago in Midtown and said, what would happen if you took an entire neighborhood together, if you redid the streetscape, if you got people to invest in storefronts, if you rebuilt the parks, if you got down the abandoned houses, could you bring these back a neighborhood at a time? And so 3 years ago we took, and I know they're going to put maps up at some point, but we had three neighborhoods, one in the McNichols-Livernois area, one in West Village on the east side, and one in southwest Detroit. And we targeted these investments. And we've already seen new apartment buildings get built. We've seen parks get renovated. We're seeing now at 7 in Livernois, where the Bee Seagulls have been sitting empty for probably 20 years, a local resident. Building 12 apartment units and 20,000 square feet of commercial in a new anchor. And so we said, what if we took that same principle and spread it to 7 more neighborhoods? But the reason Midtown worked was you had people like Kresge who, if there was a new coffee shop going in, it might be $50,000 away from being able to work on its own. So they gave him $50,000 grants to get it going. It was jump-started by public investment or philanthropic investment. And so I went to my friend Gary Torgo. I said, we need $35 million for these 7 neighborhoods. And he said, no problem. And so he went to Steve Steinauer at Huntington Bank and to Dan Lepp at Blue Cross. And before long, we had David Dauk from American Axle, and then Sandro Donello from Flagstar, Dave Girardot from Fifth Third, and Roger Penske, who all came in and said, we'll put the money in because we know if we put the money in at first, we don't need to put any money into downtown and midtown anymore. It's taken off. We don't need to put any money into Corktown anymore. We don't need to put any money into north into the new center anymore. Could we duplicate this 10 more times? And over the next few years, we're going to see whether this succeeds.
So is this something that you see being able to help every neighborhood? One of your famous quotes is, every neighborhood has a future. And I always get a little nervous when you say that because I think it implies in some ways every neighborhood has the same future.
I never said
right.
That.
You're not saying that, but is this something that you think can get to every part of the city?
So, you know, once a week I sit in living rooms with neighbors still and talk about what's going on. People in Detroit, you know, you see the stuff in the paper about two Detroits you don't care about us. People in the neighborhoods know the truth. And they know their neighborhoods have gotten better, their property values are up. In fact, we're going to announce in a couple of hours the highest assessment increases in 20 years, but they know the property values are going up, they know the street lights are on, they know the abandoned houses are coming down, but what they want to know is, when do I get that vacant storefront filled in so I can go up and get a cup of coffee and go up and get some milk and the like? They also know this. Businesses, private business has to make money. Government doesn't tell business where to go. Private business has to make money. But if we can create an environment where enough people live in the neighborhood, where we do enough to beautify the streetscape, give them a little bit of help getting started, then you'll see people like Alicia George, who actually came in before there was any help, and start to succeed. And can we go from three neighborhoods to 10 neighborhoods to, in 5 years, 15 or 20 neighborhoods? We're going to see. So far, people are making money in Corktown. People are making money in West Village. If 5 years from now they're making money in Jefferson, Chalmers, in the North End, then we're going to be able to go on to the next neighborhood. But I bet you at least once a week some developer shows up in New York or Atlanta and says there's no deals left in downtown and midtown. I say, no kidding. But there are deals in Jefferson, Chalmers. There are deals in East English Village. And so now we're trying to get that investment to shift.
Are there parts of the city that you can imagine this won't work, that things have gone too far, or the problems are too complex and beyond the reach of a program like this?
You know, I think there could be areas where the future is more stormwater maintenance in the larger vacant areas and a nice marsh around them. In some ways, John Hans is doing this in Hans Farms, where he's planted trees, and the neighbors who are still there are very supportive of that because the nature of the neighborhood has gotten better. But in each of our planning sessions, these planning sessions are done an average of 30 or 40 meetings with the neighbors. So we aren't saying we wrote some plan up at City Hall, we're coming in to drop it in. The neighbors are sitting in the room with us saying, here's what we want to see in our neighborhood. But you come down to the Fitzgerald area where we started, where we took all these dilapidated houses and have built a beautiful Ella Fitzgerald Park that the neighbors are using all the time. And then we fixed the sidewalks that were all busted up. We cleaned out the abandoned lots, and now we're planting flowers. We went in the order that the neighbors said they wanted it. Now, your former paper, and this is life in my world, the park got cleared out and built on time. The abandoned houses got knocked down on time. The repaving got done on time. The sidewalks got done on time. But the rehabbing of new people is behind schedule. And so I'm getting beat up. Program's behind schedule. Well, that's true. One of the five phases is behind schedule, and this is just the nature of the business. It's one step at a time, but if you go talk to most people, they can see the difference, and certainly the sales prices of homes, which have gone up dramatically, are recognizing that.
I'm going to come back to you and talk a little more about how we measure how these things are working in terms of human capital. But Alicia, I want to get you involved in the conversation here. Talk about the business that you opened in 2010 in Detroit, what it was like when you did that, what it was like in the neighborhood where you did it, and how things have changed over that 8 years.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me on. My name is Alicia George, and I had a dream of having a neighborhood coffee shop in my area. I had this dream in 2000 that we in our community deserved a place where people can go and meet, where they can get online, where they can listen to a little poetry or jazz, get a cup of coffee, work with local vendors who can bring in baked goods and make it a real village. And so in 2005, support from all over the northwest side of Detroit started to help nonprofits, family, friends, artists. Everyone came together. I saw the vision of having this coffee shop, but it was the people. It was over 1,000 people that helped. And when I tried to go and get a loan,
we'll get to that on there.
That was before I was around.
This is before their time. This is before their time. But when I tried to go get a loan in 2006 and 2007, the bank at that time didn't want to hear it. Said that this was the worst area that we were in, that I was a female, that I was black, and that they wouldn't give the money. And so that's when the people power came. And it made me stronger. It made us stronger. It made us see that we can all come together and make something happen. The political, the city, those are nuggets. Those are in addition to what it is that you want to do with your business, with your nonprofit. The banks are, they help. They lift you up. But the answer lies within you and your community and in your neighborhood. And so we opened October 30th, which is Angels Night, in 2010. And we opened up with one-pound cake and a Mr. Coffee Maker, and I was calling it Java House. And so it began. And so people started to be aware of it. And people started to come from all over the world to see how we had taken these series of buildings where Java House is located. It's located inside of the Artist Village. The Artist Village goes for a block long. We are two doors down from the Redford Theater, right across from Sweet Potato, next door to nonprofit Motor City Blockbusters. And the Artist Village is a special place. When you come in, the Java House is like the foyer. And then there's a courtyard and a garden and a studio and a gallery and a shared space, and soon to have a loft to make that to a bed and breakfast. So what I saw over that time is people would come from the community and say, Miss Alicia, do you own this? Yes. And you can see that they were proud that somebody from the community, right on their block, in their neighborhood, was owning something and inviting them in to share. And then there was people that had dreams and hopes of having their own businesses. So they would come in, and I would talk to them and encourage them that you can do it, that it comes from with you, and then the help would assist you. The engagement parties that the city has done with our neighborhood, it's the people. It's up to us. But the engagement parties are going to have trust with our relationship and communication and honesty. And so I'm here to represent an entrepreneur, a neighbor, and just the people from the community. I think that this recipe that we have right now with the strategic neighborhood funds would be the antidote to each neighborhood all over the city of Detroit.
Well said.
So Alicia, can you talk a little more about Brightmore, which is where you're located? Not too long ago, there were people who said this won't be a neighborhood in 10 years, in 20 years, that this is the kind of place that is absolutely emptying out. What changed, and what role do you see the city playing in helping to push that change forward?
So, yes, Brightmore is on the northwest side of Detroit. It's sister neighborhood is the old Redford where we are. But Brightmore, they felt abandoned. They felt like the ugly redhead stepchild. They felt like no one cared. And if you look at the map, it's one of the entryways into the city of Detroit, from Redford, from Dearborn, from Southfield. Why not let that be a neighborhood that could be beautiful? There's an undying spirit, though, in Brightmore. There are people there that will roll up their sleeves to do whatever they gotta do. The spirit that's there is what has made it stay. The community gardens, the churches, the rec centers, Gompers Elementary School, receiving Apple Awards. You know, something that's so terrible sometimes, you can see the beauty out of it. And again, with the strategic neighborhood funds, once we start engaging with the community and they start to let us know exactly what they want, we can be a shining spot. We can be the entryway to the city of Detroit right there in Brightmore. And I know a lot of people ask themselves, should I stay or should I go? And you got a lot of people that want to stay. They want to be part of the revitalization. They want to be part of the good stories. They were there to weather the storms, so why not be there when the rainbow comes?
Okay. Gary, banks also have made something of a pivot and in the way that they think about investment in Detroit. We are starting to see a lot more investment in neighborhoods, not quite on the level of downtown and midtown yet, but I think we can see it moving in that direction. Talk about, from your chair, how that looks and why it's happening and how you measure success in this very different part of the city than where you guys have been.
Sure, thank you for having me. I was born and raised in Detroit. I grew up on Grigg Street in Northwest Detroit, and I watched, like many people in the audience and around the city, so much difficulty that Detroit was facing. And when I was able to get into the chair of a banker and start to see the kinds of things that banks can do, I took a ride with my business partner, Dave Provost, and I with the mayor through the neighborhoods very early on at the beginning of Talmer Bank and said, what can we do? Banks can do a lot. Banks have a lot of power and a lot of ability. And although we're supposed to be contributing to communities, there is nothing more vital to the success of a community and to the success of a bank if it's not home lending, if it's not small business, if it's not neighborhood rehabilitation. And since we are so invested in the city and in the community, we realize that without the neighborhoods coming back, Detroit will never have the revitalization it wants. We will see a great downtown and a great midtown, as the mayor said, but without the neighborhoods and the strength of the neighborhoods, and banks can play a key role in that effort. In 2015, we traveled with the mayor to the Clinton Global Initiative to talk about American cities, and Detroit was doing just a few hundred mortgages across the city. Today, with great changes with the Detroit Home Mortgage Program, with banks concentrating less and less on trying to find the right appraisal, but doing more and more to figure out how to lend that person, how to make it comfortable for someone to borrow. If the banks can do that, and that's what the banks are interested in, it will continue to show greater home ownership, greater opportunity to get mortgages, greater opportunity to have small business lending. We had an agreement this morning. We're loaning her money. It took about 10 minutes. She's a great risk. And so we believe, and I think my colleagues, those that joined with us, the banks and the companies, the corporations that joined in this fund, recognize that the key to the city of Detroit's revitalization is going to happen in the streets of Detroit, in the neighborhoods. And if the banks don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. And that's really what we see as a key part of our role, of our mission, and of our obligation.
So if you dial the calendar back a decade, the banks are being blamed for a lot of the things that are going wrong in the city. They're holding on to properties that are abandoned. They're putting people out of homes. Foreclosures are through the roof. Can you talk about how you manage the tension between that position and the position you have now, which is we're going to come in and help to make things better, to help prop the city up? They're opposite ends, it seems, of the spectrum.
You know, when you have a willing leader like Mike Duggan and a great city council and a community that's joined together and incredible entrepreneurs like Alicia that are doing things in the community, it brings everybody together in a way that nobody can stand on the sidelines anymore. I wasn't in the banking business a decade ago, but I could tell you today, my colleagues, the banking industry in this town is fully focused on partnering up with the city, with the entrepreneurs, with the housing community, with the Detroit Land Bank to make sure that we are following the trend of trying to populate more and more the city of Detroit by making it easier to borrow money. The Detroit Home Mortgage Program is a perfect example. In order for Detroit to really grow, people have to have home ownership. And if the banks aren't willing to loan money for those mortgages, you can't get into a home. You can't fix up the home. One of the things that was unique about Detroit was that people were buying homes, but they needed more money than the mortgage to fix up those homes. Detroit's got an old housing stock. We partnered up with the Marygrove College neighborhood and said, we're gonna loan anybody that wants to buy a house in Marygrove College, we're gonna loan them not only the first mortgage, but we're gonna give them a forgivable $25,000 grant loan in order to fix up the house, because that is the mission, is to not just let them buy the house, they need to be able to fix it up and make it livable and comfortable for them to be there.
That's right.
Stephen, if I could tie this together and so the audience can understand. So Alicia George has got this, the Java House over on Losser near Grand River. How does the Strategic Neighborhood Fund help? It's now a Strategic Neighborhood Fund neighborhood. Well, not far away, there is a school called Holcomb School. It's an elementary school that's been abandoned for probably 8 or 10 years. Now, can you imagine living in a neighborhood where what's anchoring your neighborhood is a boarded up school, which as much as we try to secure it, people are in and out of? Because we have assistance from the Strategic Neighborhood Fund, we've just let a contract for a developer who's gonna convert that school into senior housing, and within a year, 32 senior citizens' families will be living in that building. It's gonna be an absolutely beautiful apartment building. Now, the houses that were around it, that we're looking at a dilapidated school building, people will start investing in those houses. And all of a sudden, you've got a group of customers that can walk up to Java House in the neighborhood as part of their experience. And that's what the Strategic Neighborhood Fund is about, is to take something that's the biggest drag on the neighborhood and turn it into an asset. And that's what we're gonna do, one neighborhood at a time.
Mr. Mayor, you've also said something really important about the people of this city. You said that, you know, talent is distributed equally among people in Detroit and other places. It's opportunity that's
right.
Unequal. Can you connect that to what you're doing with the investment side of things? How do you measure movement in terms of opportunity, in terms of equality on the back end of something like this Neighborhood Strategic Fund?
Well, it's going to be interesting. So the first apartment building built in West Village was developed by Cliff Brown, an African-American Detroiter. Detroiters rebuilding the neighborhood. At B. Siegel's, the fella who is building the new commercial strip there is a fella who actually lives about a mile away in Sherwood Forest. And to go at this very question, we started 4 years ago Motor City Match, which is a number of philanthropic groups. Every single quarter in this city, we give out $500,000 in grants, average about $50,000 each, for new business startups. And we get a couple hundred people who put in really good business plans and compete. And it came out of conversations that we had, including at Java House, where folks from Detroit said, I didn't grow up where I've got a family that can put the money in to start my business and take a risk. I don't have the bank coming to me. How does somebody like me from the city get an opportunity? We now have 52 businesses open in the city out of Motor City Match. 80% Detroiters. We got another 32 under construction, and we call it Match because we're matching the business owner with the vacant storefronts in these areas. And so we've still got some vacant storefronts near Grand River Losser. We aren't done yet. The buyers has helped, but we got more. But we're gonna target the new businesses into these types of neighborhoods. And I do think that we could raise a generation of Detroiters that says, I don't have to grow up and work for somebody else. I could be my own boss. And I'm getting the opportunity to see more and more people who have done it.
Alicia, are you seeing more of this kind of opportunity around you, not just in terms of your business, but in the neighborhood itself?
Yes. Since opening, there was only a few anchors in the neighborhood, the Redford Theater, Sweet Potato, Blight Busters, Barbershop. Then people started opening up a sewing shop, and then Sweet Potato moved across the street and expanded. And then there's a cake shop. Lasher is known for the sweets and the eats, everybody. Okay. a cake shop, and they distribute their business throughout the city of Detroit. At one point, we had counted about 8 or 9 new businesses that had opened up, and the youngest one had been coming to the village since he was 15, graduated with an art program in Chicago, and he came back to Lasher, opened up a clothing shop called Profit, and is doing very well to this day. So it started to be contagious of being an entrepreneur, of rolling up your sleeves and doing what it is that your dreams or your goals or your family businesses left down to you. The hope that you see in people, the opportunities now for employment and education and to brag about new things that are opening up in our area. Because at one point it was like we were in a coma. It was like nothing was going on.
And you feel like the quality of life there for the families that live there is improving
It's
along
improving.
With the business
it's
climate.
Heading up. Yeah. It's heading up.
Gary, I'm curious about return from your standpoint, right? I worry sometimes that that some of what's happening in Detroit is people feeling excited about possibility and feeling maybe charitable about wanting to help, but that eventually they're going to say, well, this has got to make financial sense from a sustainability standpoint. I wonder what you see from the banking side in terms of whether this is something you can keep doing at the level that you're doing without the kind of returns that you would have gotten in downtown or midtown. It'll be a slower yield in the neighborhoods.
So it's very interesting. We have seen only great growth as we continue to do good things in the community. We see it as very much an equality of doing good things and the opportunity to do good things and the success of our enterprise. Teaming up with Detroit, doing things in the neighborhoods, helping people to lift themselves up in small business or housing is only good for us, and that is our mission. And if you look across the city of Detroit in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years and you see the home prices going up and our ability to get appraisals that we couldn't get before, the ability to loan folks money who could and would want to move into Detroit, but years ago just didn't have the ability to do it. You couldn't get an appraisal that was appropriate. Right. Today, we are seeing a tremendous surge of opportunity, which is only good for the profitability of companies and banks. If you're in Detroit and you want to succeed in Detroit, the community has to succeed around you. And when they do, you're going to see profits for your company. We have shareholders, we're a public company, but I believe the public understands that when we are doing the right thing, it will only be good for our enterprise.
Right. And so I'll give you a sense of the magnitude of it. So I drove Gary through the area behind Marygrove, which was just devastated. You had some blocks 80% vacant, and these were beautiful homes at one point. And I said, this is where I want to start. And at that point, if a house sold in there for $10,000, you had a good day. And I got Governor Snyder to come down and bring his cabinet. I wanted to drive him through. The governor was late, so the state police had to drive him separately, and I've got his cabinet with my team on a bus, and the state police call and say, where should we meet up with you? And I said, the corner of Puritan and Kentucky. And so about 5 minutes later, the state police called back and said, where? I said, just park on the street. We'll be there. I said, I drive there by myself all the time.
Yes, you do.
The state police went inside the Marygrove fence with the governor. They would not stay on that block for 10 minutes till we got there. 2 years later, Gary calls me on the phone. He says, you got to look at this. We got a house for Marygrove that just listed for $102,000. So this can work. But it was an enormous concentrated effort in that area. And so that's what we've learned. It can concentrate the effort in area at a time. We've got beautiful housing stock in the city people walked away from. We can bring it back.
Steve, one of the very first deals that happened in Marygrove, a very wonderful young woman came and said she wants to buy a house in Marygrove from the land bank. We're going to do the finance and we're going to get the fix up for her. And I met her and I said, tell me why this house and why Marygrove and why did you come here? She said, right next door to the house that I'm buying, my parents live. I grew up in that home. I never dreamed I'd come back to Detroit and live next door to them. And that was my dream and we're realizing it today because of this program.
That pull of home is really powerful here for people in Detroit. Okay, thanks very much to our panel for being here.
All right, thank you.
And we will go back to Steve Gregorian.
Thank you, guys. So we asked you to submit questions via email, I think, on Friday or so. And trust me, we got some responses from you. So we're going to just start down with Gary first, and we're just only have time for one question for each of the panelists. So, Gary, we see your company has made a decision to move downtown. Why did your company make that decision?
Detroit is the hottest town in America. Why wouldn't we want to be there? We recognize that southeastern Michigan and the city of Detroit are the growth areas for our company. We're doing a lot. We're all over the state of Michigan. We're the largest headquartered bank today in Michigan. We've got deep commitments in the Lower Peninsula and Midland. We've got a great workforce across the state. But we see Detroit as the epicenter today of southeastern Michigan and the opportunity to do great things. And our board unanimously made a decision that Detroit was the place. We're going to be building a tower on Woodward and Elizabeth. And we see the opportunity to move a good number of employees down to Detroit, of colleagues of the bank, to really help to continue to jumpstart what's going on in the city of Detroit. It's really exciting to us. We see it as an opportunity. We see the opportunity to do things for our shareholders and also to give back to the community.
Terrific. Well, we're looking forward to having you as neighbors, so welcome. Thanks. You. Ms. George, you're up here representing lots of small business owners in Detroit. When you're talking with them, or perhaps for yourself, do you have any concerns about small business, and what can we do, what can the city do to alleviate small business concerns?
The concerns are minor, just that small businesses will continue to need resources, financial literacy, help with their retail, management, employment, and know that whatever programs and policies and procedures that come to the neighborhoods where your small businesses are, mom and pop shops, that don't have any programs that could displace us, that could move us so far out that we're unable to stay. There should be diversity, a village, if you will, where we all give to that, big or small. So businesses want to feel secure. They want to feel that the city has their back, that they support their efforts, and that as things change, that they have enough time and the right education to join in with the new development and to witness everything that's happening. They just don't want to be forgotten or left out.
Thank you, Alicia. Mr. Mayor, we could probably do a ton of programs on this next topic, but we'll give you the last word of the panel here. Talk about plans, if any, to form an Office of Early Childhood to focus on pre-K education and families.
Well, we can fix all the houses we want and incentivize all the businesses we want, but if our children aren't learning in the schools, this city is going to be terribly hampered. And right now, we have third grade reading levels that are completely unacceptable. And so I am working now. I talked to Governor Whitmer about it last week. Quality Head Start for four-year-olds has a huge advantage in children coming to school ready to read. And so there is significant money that's been appropriated by the federal government, and we're talking to the state. Kresge and Kellogg Foundation have been extremely supportive in their statements. We've talked to all of the Head Start and Great Start providers. So I'm hopeful in the coming months you're going to see us put together a proposal. But I really would like parents in this city to know that your child at 4 years old has a full day preschool. And that's our goal. And I think with the new governor, we're going to get it done.
And I lied. Stephen Henderson, you're going to get the last question. Are you ready? Sure. Everybody that I've talked to today said, wow, look at his suit and shoes. So tell us about your style. Who selects the clothes for me, and where do you buy that stuff?
I got all of this from a place called eHaberdasher. It's an online site that buys clothes from Europe and sells them over here. So
there you have it.
You can go there and do the same.
There you go. There's a plug for you all. So ladies and gentlemen, please, a round of applause. Mayor Duggan, Gary Torgo, Alicia George, Stephen Henderson.
It is sharp.
Once again, a round of applause. Rod Alberts, Bill Gulling, thanks for hosting us. Thanks for the ticket to the auto show. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the auto show. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.